Last time on Nutty Bites.
Today with me, I have guests T. Morris and Philippa Ballantyne, the writing team behind the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novels. They are about to come out with their third novel in that series, as well as authors of several, several other novels. T. Pip, say hello.
Hi there. Hello. Hey there.
Also, I have Heath and Angela from the Red Dwarf podcast, and Angela is also of the Through the Pages of Sherlock Holmes podcast. Say hello, Heath and Angela.
Hello.
Hi.
And of course, with me, my regular co-host or antagonist, Tech.
Hi, I'm Tech.
We're going to talk about our favorite fictional couples. These are couples that work really well together, are an inspiration for whatever reason you choose them. One thing that I'm noticing as we're throwing out these couples is that in order to have a good couple, is each of the characters needs to be fully fleshed out in their own right.
Yes.
And they need to be as important to the story as the other character. And I think that that is true in all of these cases. None of the partners in any of these couples are there just to be a partner.
No.
Which is, you know, I mean, even Zoe and Wash, who start out married, they're not there just to be married to the other person. But it's just they just happen to
actually,
be married.
There is one instance where two people are kind of forced to be together, but they're not together. And even though there may or may not be an attraction, it's they just deal with it, and you see them kind of coping with each other. I'm surprised you're not catching on with this right now.
I thought you mean us.
No. I'm talking about Raleigh and Mako from
Pacific Rim.
The person he is the most compatible with is Mako. So they have to be a couple. They have to work together. And you got to admit, nothing gets more intimate than sharing someone else's thoughts. And this was something that I give the writers of Pacific Rim a lot of credit, because if you haven't picked it up, there was a graphic novel called Pacific Rim: Tales from Year Zero, and it's the prequel.
Excuse me. Are these characters the ones where the male is played by Robert Maillet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ah, cool. I haven't seen the movie yet.
The movie's brilliant.
We had Robert Maillet come into CHSR quite a few times, and he's really awesome. So, woohoo! Always support him.
Yeah. And a lot of people really enjoyed the fact that Raleigh and Mako never kissed. Yeah. The most intimate thing they did was touch each other's foreheads at the end, and people were like, yeah, okay, I can live with that.
I like that.
Yeah, it was great. You didn't have to hook up anybody with anybody.
And it's a bit like the Donna and the Doctor.
It was Donna and the Doctor. There was you talk about great little moments in the film. No spoiler, but it's a great moment. They're throwing candidates at him. They're throwing candidates at Raleigh, and he dusts one with the floor, and he looks at Mako, and he goes, "What?" And you know. Idris Elba looks at her, and she says, "What is it?" And he goes, "Every time I finish a fight, you do this." and it's a little, it's just this little exchange where it's just so, it's like these two might as well be married, and it was great, and I really admire. I really think Pacific Rim will be an underrated classic from last year, because it was so much fun. It didn't try to be anything else than what it was. And the relationship between Raleigh and Mako was one of the most solid I've seen in a long time in an action adventure movie.
And she wasn't there just to be his.
And she wasn't there to be eye candy, to be eye candy or.
Oh, but he was Raleigh. There. Idris Elba. They had Idris Elba.
Well, they had Idris Elba. There was your eye candy, baby. There was your eye candy. Oh, whoa! Sorry, you talk about a great codependent couple, John Luther. And
Paul McGann's character.
No. The psycho bitch.
Oh, Alice.
Alice. Are you guys familiar with Luther? The BBC.
No, I haven't seen it.
Definitely watch it.
You're gonna want to watch this. Alice is introduced in the very first episode, and this character is so compelling they just had to keep bringing her back through all three seasons. She is a complete sociopath. And she's the only person that gets John
Luther.
She's
his friend.
Yeah. She's his mate. You know.
You know, Netflix keeps telling me to watch Luther because I watch all this other BBC stuff. So maybe now. I'll
do watch it.
Yeah, do watch it. Do watch it.
I got one, and we got to go back in time for this one. Back to a mythical time that my parents tell me existed in the 60s.
Ooh.
But an origin of a lot of these tropes and a lot of these workplace romances that turn into weddings and a lot of these interpersonal dynamics that you see on TV now all come from Agent 86 and Agent 99.
Ah, yes.
185, as I like to call them.
Is that their ship name? 185?
185. But Maxwell Smart from the show Get Smart and his co-agent, Agent 99, you never learn her real name.
No, you never do. You never do. Wow. Yeah.
Didn't they, like, cough over when they got married?
Yes. And
sort of a, and at one point they meet her mother, and her mother calls her Susan or something, and then Max turns to her and goes, that's not my real name. It's so far-reaching, the influence that this couple has, that, you know, Max being the lovable comic complete and utter buffoon at his, you know, just a
it's kind of groundbreaking for the time when you think about it. Yeah, he's the buffoon, and she's the onto
and,
it.
And she's the smart one.
She's the real success behind all the missions, but she's so loving and so kind and so supporting that she's maybe we should interrogate him. 99, we can't interrogate him. What we need to do is interrogate him.
Yeah.
Good idea, Max. Let's interrogate him. To anybody who
Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks at his Mel best. Brooks. Mel Brooks exactly. at his best. I mean,
well, and if you think about it, we're talking about a time when, like, it's pre-women's lib.
It's Mad Men, baby.
Yeah. And I mean, they even talk about how there's a different union for the female agents, and they make all this money less and all this other stuff. And yet, she's a really forward character. Like, Mel Brooks slipped in a lot of stuff in there. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Tech.
Everything on that show is Archer. Archer is Get Smart again. And Lana Lana is just what? Max and 99. And maybe it's why I like Archer so much.
That Lana and Archer do not work. They will not be brought in this toxic.
I'm growing.
I'm a big gentleman.
Toxic.
But yeah,
half of his drop-ins are
half of my drop-ins on the shared desk are all from Archer. I need to get a isolated one of Lana going nope because I'm getting I worked that one out.
Okay, I'm gonna bring in one that's kind of odd, but I feel inspired by your background there, Nettie and Tech. I'm gonna go with the Joker and Harley Quinn.
Oh, that background.
They are so right for each other, but so toxic at the same time.
That one episode of TAS. Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
Harley is amazing as a character in her own right.
Yep.
Like, Harley and the Joker are so amazing that Harley was from the animated series and was, I believe, the first character to be brought into a comic book that came from a TV show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say that episode of TAS, are you talking about the backstory of Harley Quinn when she was assigned to the Joker or something like that?
I forget the name of the episode, but go ahead, love.
It was the one where it kept flashing back and flashing forward.
Yeah.
And
basically it just makes it clear that, it's her fault that he treats her like he does because she doesn't get the joke. It's the clearest metaphor for relationship abuse. It was as far as it could possibly go on a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
A brilliant Saturday morning cartoon, but a brilliant Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was on weekdays in the afternoon for me. So.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when the animated series was on, I remember my housemates, we would all race home because we didn't want to miss the opening credits. We did not want to miss the opening credits.
People can love on Christian Bale all they want, but Kevin Conroy is forever my favorite Batman.
You see, Mark
Hamill as Joker.
I think it's. I think I am so proud that Mark Hamill has now become an icon for two generations. One generation will always see him as Luke Skywalker, and the other one will say, oh, no, that's the Joker, man. And
I see them as both, so does that mean he comes straddling the generations here?
Well, since you talk about the Joker and Harley, I have to bring up my favorite episode of the animated series, and it's a different couple, but it's also Harley. It's Harley and Poison Ivy. They are an awesome couple. There's one episode where it's all about them, and she goes back to the Joker at the end of it, but the episodes after that, they continue the story.
Yeah.
There's still little discussions, and there's still a relationship between Ivy and Harley, and I just love that pairing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good pairing. Yeah, it's a good pairing.
Probably healthier.
Much healthier, yes.
Maddie, going back to what you said about one of the big prerequisites being that both characters have to be characters for the couple to work. Angela and I, when we were trying to talk, well, you know, what about this? What about that? What's our big favorite romances in fiction? And we're like, oh, what about The Princess Bride? And then we had to stop and think. And sadly, Buttercup is not a complete enough character for that to be a favorite couple.
There's a better couple in that movie.
Inigo and Fezzik?
Yes.
Yes.
The whole rhyming Fezzik, thing.
Are there rocks ahead?
They'll all be dead.
Which, by the way,
that way, I mean it.
God forbid they ever remake that movie. Because it was perfect as it is.
No.
But I could see Robert Maillet playing Fezzik.
I can't
believe it. No. Johnny Depp is Inigo.
Oh!
With a bird on his head.
Yes, it'll happen. Now we've said it.
Oh, no.
We summoned it.
Thank you, Angela. It's Disasterpiece Theatre.
I was just going to say, this is a total Disasterpiece Theatre. Well, you know what? This is how it would go on their show. You know what we need instead of Johnny Depp is we need somebody younger, someone the kids like. What about Justin Bieber?
Yes.
He's hot. He's in the news.
Or Shia LaBeouf.
Wait, no, we can't call the beef. The beef retired. Remember, he went on that whole Twitter book thing.
There's no more beef.
There's no more beef. Where's the beef? He's retired.
There's no more beef, really?
You could get Shia LaBeouf to write the script, and it would be the exact same movie.
There you go. Boom. Nicely played.
Does that mean that Shia LaBeouf is no longer an enemy of Nutty Bites, or is he still our enemy?
He'll always be an enemy of Nutty Bites.
They can't remake Princess Bride because it was perfect in its imperfection.
No one can play Peter Falk's character.
No.
The rabbit says he'll always be an enemy.
Yes.
And you get to see Chris Sarandon this weekend.
Well, yes, he's going to be at the Days of the Dead in Atlanta. Ooh.
Yes.
I'm sorry, he's going to be... So what's the event?
Days of the Dead. It's a small horror convention. This one is in Atlanta. And
Chris Sarandon's going to be there.
Linda Blair. Keith David is who I'm probably most looking for because I'm going to get him to sign some Mass Effect things.
Oh, nice. Very nice. See, I was very proud. It was very nice seeing Chris Sarandon show up in the remake of Fright Night.
Yes.
That was as much as people love Chris Sarandon in The Princess Bride. I'm partial to him in Fright Night. He was a great vamp.
Yes.
Yeah. Is he Humperdinck?
Yes.
No, he was. Was he? Yes, he was Humperdinck.
Yes, he was Humperdinck. Okay. Yeah.
I'm Humperdinck. Like, that's the only actor I don't know.
Bye, people.
Humperdinck.
A month from now.
I've got a
chewing the scenery. Just chewing.
Wedding the plan. Jack Skellington. Award of Scheme. My wife to kill. I mean, simply, I'm swamped.
Get some.
So who's got another good couple for us?
Brian Lila.
Ooh, nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Noise. No, I had another one.
Yes?
Olivia and Peter from Fringe. I like them.
Yeah, she's been on a Fringe.
I've been on a Fringe kick lately, yeah. So I like them. I like her particularly, but he's kind of charming.
And can I also then throw out Peter and Walter?
Oh, yeah, they're good, too. I
also need to throw out maybe the quintessential TV couple of all time. A little story about Sam and Diane.
Yes.
Sam and Diane. Ah, cheers.
We've been on a cheers kick lately.
It's better than you remember.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Especially the early episodes.
Yeah, the earlier episodes are just fantastic. Yeah. They still managed to keep the momentum of the show going, but in those early seasons of Cheers, it's untouchable. And I mean, I guess I'm trying to broaden my mind to different couples outside of science fiction and fantasy, but
you know who I like? I like someone short and someone tall. Legolas and Gimli.
Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, they're bridging the gap between their two peoples.
I'll never see the ring in the hands of an elf.
But The Hobbit 2 has showed us that Feely and random elven chick suddenly have a huge relationship over a pebble.
Well, he is a sexy dwarf. I'm sorry. Thorin's good looking, but
these. I mean, look.
He made a "what's in my pants" joke. I mean, it was true love.
Let's just be painfully honest. The first, the Lord of the Rings, the dwarves were represented by John Rhys-Davies, and I'm okay with that. You know, we had the nobody. I go, I won't be tossed by an elf. You know, things like that. Okay,
nobody
we had that. Nobody tosses a dwarf. That sort of thing. Okay, fine.
What about the elf scene?
Then they started coming out with the pictures from The Hobbit, and I'm like, I'm waiting for these guys. I'm waiting for these dwarves, particularly Thorin, to go, I'm bringing six to bed. I mean, somebody has to get laid.
I have to say that the Lord of the Rings does supply the best couples breakup between Gandalf and Saruman.
That is a full on romance breakup.
You could see the pain in Gandalf's eyes when he realized he'd been betrayed.
And then, bitch, please. He gave him the bitch slap with the staff. And then he hangs them off.
You just knew that they'd loved each other for a long time, and then suddenly there was this massive breakup.
But you kind of see that coming in The Hobbit, though, because when Saruman starts to talk, Gandalf does that eye roll of like, oh, honey, yes. I wish you wouldn't talk.
You're talking, and I'm just turning you out.
Every time you talk, Saruman, I keep hearing, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah. Well, it's all because Saruman is jealous of Radagast.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
Gandalf's been hanging out with Radagast.
What happened was, Gandalf is all like,
tell me, when did Saruman the Wise start texting Sauron behind my back?
He sees, like, the phone ringing with the eye.
That Gandalf is such a...
Sashimi.
I'm just going to get a
sashimi.
Slap on him.
Although I don't know why it was such a big deal that he made Orokai. Apparently goblins can wander around in sunlight now.
He was angry. But yeah. Well, I mean,
sending off Orokai to you. #FML.
Well, they had been together for a long time.
They had been.
There's a lot of bitterness.
Since we're talking about some of these, you know, these fine British actors. The ultimate bromance. I'm going to go there.
Yep.
Patrick Stewart.
Yes.
Ian McKellen.
Yes.
Yes.
On Twitter.
Because
that's not fictional. That's in
Twitter. Anywhere. Any freaking way.
They apparently just go hang out together all the time.
Could you imagine being in a bar somewhere and Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen just hanging? I'm like, yeah, I'm having beer with them. But the thing is, I never believed.
Welcome to New York, by the way.
There you go. But that's the thing. I never believed that that Magneto and Xavier were friends. I never bought into the fact that they were. I never until I saw the original X-Men, mm-hmm. and just in that mm-hmm. opening scene, I'm like,
they're
guys are friends, and
they hang
and
out.
Dovetailing
he bends spoons.
Yeah, and dovetailing right off that. Not only do McKellen and Stewart play the bromance really well, but
the Bender,
alongside McAvoy, they're keeping it right in pace with it. And I'm like,
talking X-Men First Class, which
was my favorite
X-Men movie,
which was absolutely stunning. And the way that, you know, I mean, I like to call X-Men First Class the rug. Because
it ties the whole
franchise together, man.
Well, not all of it.
I really, some of them nihilists don't come and steal that movie away from us.
And if they did, they're gonna be. But yes.
Yeah, I liked X-Men First Class a lot, but McAvoy in general, even when he's in an otherwise mediocre movie, I always like his performance. He never brings it anyway.
Even when he's got goat legs, he's still bringing it.
But it's
the
true.
Thing is, but that's a great bromance right there is Magneto and Xavier, particularly in the films, because in the films they make it work. They make it. They make
got
it
chemistry.
Work. They've got some insane chemistry. And you know, had I not lost my job, I would have said to Pip, you know what, we are going to go see. I can't stand the plays of Sam Beckett, and not the one that went time traveling. We'll talk about him in a second. But Samuel Beckett, I cannot stand.
Waiting for Godot is not your thing.
No, Waiting for Godot. No.
No Endgame.
But I would sit around and just watch those two guys just hang out in the pink.
But because it's McKellen and Stewart, I'm going to be like, no, I'm going to see Beckett tonight. I'm going to see Beckett. It's going to be pretentious as hell, but
forget it.
It's Magneto and it's Xavier. I'm there, you know? I did. I just dropped the F-bomb. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's going to be turned into taco or burrito.
Yeah, right.
Taco.
Ooh. But taco, you know. but speaking about that, another terrific bromance from the genre is Sam Beckett, the time traveler, and Al.
Yeah.
Quantum Leap. God, that last episode of Quantum Leap just makes me cry like a baby. Makes me cry like a mother flipping baby.
Speaking of Quantum Leap, it holds up.
Yeah, it does. It does hold up. It holds up really well.
I think my favorite the episode that makes me cry so much. Is the episode when Sam and Al switch, then he has to go back and then forget his whole life, and then anything that has to do with Al's history is just always amazing.
Yeah. Look at Sam. Yeah. I mean, the story ends well because after that sad final episode, he becomes a starship captain. So it all works out.
Win-win.
Sam has a son who is another very good sci-fi couple, Chuck and Sarah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Chuck, as in the show Chuck. I need to watch that show.
Yes, you do. It's awesome.
There's a lot of shows that we're trying to get caught up on. I need to get
spoiler alert. Chuck has a father.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
A father and a mother that created him.
What's the point of watching it now?
Chuck is it's good. It's good stuff.
It is. Lots of good cameos in that show.
Yes. And lots of sort of fun, self-indulgent nerd.
Mm-hmm. See, again, I would tout the relationship between Chuck and his best friend over Morgan. Chuck and Sarah. Yeah, Morgan, that's his name, over Chuck and Sarah, because I felt that connection was a lot stronger. I mean, I understood why Chuck cared about Sarah, but for the longest time, like, it was like, why does she care about him?
Because adorable grin... Like, he grins and his whole face lights up and it's because
she saw through the glasses and the nerd herd, gotcha, okay.
Yes.
That's the other thing. I love these movies where it's like these total dweebs, supposed dweebs, and meanwhile they're just these statuesque.
I know.
Yes.
Xander's giant soldiers. Yeah.
It's not wish fulfillment in any way.
No.
So I'm going to go to another couple that involves a giant geek. That in the beginning of it, I did not think was attractive at all. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, I found that character very sexy. I'm going to go with Simon and Alicia and Misfits.
I knew that's where you were going.
Yes.
I don't know how.
Nope.
Okay, so you two do watch Game of Thrones. I know that.
Yes.
All right, right.
Creepy McCreeperson from the latest season.
Yeah.
He is one of the main ensemble cast, and he goes from being completely skeezy to, oh my god, he's totally sexy, and ends up with somebody that you would never expect. It's amazing. It's a great show. You should definitely watch it. Mm-hmm. The first three seasons are a great arc, and it just tells their whole love story.
Yeah.
I love it.
And I learned.
And then no need to watch after that.
And I even,
I learned lots of new British slang curses.
Oh, yes. The fact that it's an entire show based around making you care about a group of kids that you normally would try very hard to not care about.
Yeah.
Because they're a bunch of misfits. Yeah, on Asbos, yeah. On parole, doing community service for a variety of minor and really stupid and annoying crimes. And this is the scum, the detritus of society, the people that I want nothing to do with. But he's really
now you care
cute.
About them.
And yep. She's really funny, and I kind of like them. And
when you learn how to understand Kelle.
Yeah, Kelle. Yeah, you will learn to be able to decipher don't hurt yourself. You will learn to decipher Chav from watching this program. And the Chav will be one of your favorite characters.
She ain't no Chav.
She ain't a flag.
We're talking about relationships, and we're talking about couples and triangles and all this stuff. I do have to get something off my chest, something a little topical. One thing you will never hear me as an author. I cannot speak for Pip, but for myself.
Yeah, you can't speak.
When I finish a story, I'm done with it. Okay. When I finish a story, you know where I'm going with this. When I finish a story, I'm done with it.
It belongs to the readers.
It belongs to the readers. Doesn't mean they're allowed to pirate it or anything like that.
No, but they can go and write their own slash fic.
They can write their own slash fic all they want. But I'm sorry, and don't bleep this out. Don't put a taco off it. Don't do anything.
Forget you.
J.K. Rowling.
I have
seriously.
To that. I do not have an explicit tag, but yes, I agree.
Seriously.
I kept waiting for a redaction. I kept waiting. It never happened.
And you know why? You know why? Because she's trying to keep
current.
She's trying to keep it going. She's trying to keep it relevant. And I'm like, look, you have cemented your place in literature history, okay?
Don't sully it.
Don't sully it with
don't
your
make
taint.
It cheap.
Yeah, don't cheapen it. Don't go, oh, you know what? I really should have done this. Well, you know what? You had an editor who could have pulled you back if they had had the balls to go up to you and say, look, ma'am, I know you're
going
to
T, I've been meaning to say I wanted Eliza to end up with Bruce.
Yeah, great. You go right ahead. You make that piece how far it goes. Because so here's the problem.
For those of us who haven't read the books, who don't know this story, what did she change in her books now?
She just said this week. Was it this week?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
said that, oh, I actually meant Harry and Hermione to end up together. And
actually,
was,
she did. That's how everybody is saying it. But the actual quote was, she's not sure that Ron and Hermione should have ended up together. She never mentioned Harry and Hermione.
She didn't. It doesn't matter.
She said something about wish fulfillment. What does that mean?
And she's bashing.
Yeah. Does she like gingers?
And I'm sitting there going, you know what?
Who does?
First off, it was at the very beginning, you knew that Ron and Hermione, I mean, it was set up.
She built
you
it well.
You see it. Yeah. She built it really well. And for her to say, you know, I think shut up. Shut your pie hole.
Because
he's not at all passionate about this.
Yeah.
Because to me, that is a sign, and J.K. Rowling is not this kind of a writer. That's the sign of a wishy-washy, weak writer who can't stand by their books. If you got issues with your characters, if you've got issues with the choices you've made, and you haven't gotten them past the editor, and they're in print in different languages around the effing world.
Really,
guess what? No. I will not go to my happy place. You've let it go. You have got to let it go. Go ahead and get drunk one night and talk about it with friends in a pub. Do not go on news wires and start talking about, yeah, you know, I don't know if Ron and Hermione should have been together. Guess what? They're together! It's canon! And if you screw with it now, you change your name to George Lucas and you be happy.
I'm done. You just want to have like a little...
Touch me at the pressure point. Touch me at the pressure point. Oh,
there we go. Okay.
Is there a an equivalent drop into the Pip Rage for T Rage? Because I think you need one.
For T Rage.
It happens far too often.
Ever since that one survival guide that I did, where I completely went unhinged on Chris Lester and many others, and Viv, God bless her, Viv and Muse got this picture of me where I'm standing up and I'm screaming in the mic and my face is beet red and I'm wearing an all black shirt.
You notice I wasn't actually at that convention.
She wasn't
otherwise,
at that convention.
I wasn't there to apply the correct pressure points, you know, to get him to take a
that
breath.
The Vulcan death grip.
Yeah.
It's the New Zealand Maori grip.
Yes.
Makes the Hawking death grip look like a flick, okay? I mean,
you just lean down and go, "Dang!"
T, you did bring up a point about George Lucas, and while we're talking about all these good couples, I need to bring up a bad one that's his fault. Because apparently in George Lucas's writing style, "Hi, I'm a girl, the only girl in the universe. Hi, I'm a guy who's not your brother." Spoilers. And
I think we're past spoilers now.
Yeah. And then suddenly, wow, we're in love and we have a relationship and let's write 85 books about it. I mean...
I know.
No. Here we go. Before we do this, I have to say, I truly, deeply
love you.
I hate sand.
I mean, screwed then, aren't you?
She died of a broken heart.
Aww.
Yeah, let's not use
the medical equipment. Of medical equipment. I mean, what's your medical degree in poetry?
Yes. We tried to save her, but she just gave up.
Actually, we have the best.
She died of a terrible director and poor.
Yes. We have one of the best Dragon Con stories ever is when a Star Wars author fixed that whole movie in about 10 seconds.
Was it Timothy Zahn?
I believe it was. It was either Kevin J. Anderson or Timothy Zahn. I think it was Timothy Zahn. But one of them, we were complaining about the dying of a broken heart, and he said, "Why not have the robot say she was so horribly injured from the choking and the rocks that it's a wonder that she's managed to hold on this long. I think she was just trying to last so she could give birth to the children."
Boom.
Boom.
You know, that will work.
Then she cares about her children and is a fighter and not just dying of broken heart-itis because her boyfriend is bad.
Because they can't think of a way to write her off
George Lucas takes strong women and tears them down till they're worthless and nothing.
Well, here's
just
the
thing. Well,
I think there's a story that ever since I read it, I went, huh. This has made me think very hard, long and hard, about Star Wars. Not Episode 4, Star Wars. Lucas's then-wife was the editor.
Yes.
And she did a lot of the editing. And she said, "George, you need to connect with these characters. You need to make them likable." She was the one that was kind of pushing for the romance between Luke and Leia because Luke was the hero. It was the 70s. We kind of rolled with it. She was the one that was like, no. You need to do this. And she was helping him make these characters so they'd be a little more redeemable at the end. One of the things... I'm just using this as an example. One of the scenes that she apparently had a lot of influence on was one of the scenes involving Han Solo and Greedo. And I'll leave it at that. So that's in 1977. And then apparently Lucas, this was the perfect storm. Somebody at the studio screwed up and her name was not submitted for the Oscars that year. So she got passed over. But Lucas, of course, was the golden boy. And he was getting busier and busier and busier, and she was getting pushed further and further and further into the back. And then they had a very nasty breakup.
And then she died of a broken heart.
No,
she's still alive, actually.
She's still alive.
But surprisingly, she didn't die of a broken heart.
Lucas apparently wanted to go. He had said before in private conversations that there were two things he wanted to do differently between Star Wars and the later films. One, he wanted to try to get rid of as much of the influence that his then wife had over the film. So we have a lot of the changes we have in the special edition. The second thing was there was a scene this is how early it started with Lucas. Lucas didn't care about the characters. He cared about the cash. Because there was a scene where Irvin Kershner is setting up Irvin Kershner, the director of Empire Strikes Back, not Episode 5, The Empire Strikes
Don't
Back.
Get on another rant, baby.
they're setting up this scene with the bounty hunters, and Kershner turns to Lucas and goes, or turns to one of the producers, might have been Kurtz, and said, "Why are we shooting this scene again? We really don't need it." And from Lucas, no, we need this for the toy line. That was the exact quote. And I know Kurt said that. Kurt said that was the exact word from Lucas. "We need that for the toy line." And that changed the way things were done. When you watch, when he says, "Oh, yeah, I had this all planned out." Oh, that's such crap. And yes, the first movie, Star Wars, great movie, great relationships with people. You had great bromances between Luke and Han. You had the wonderful romance between Han and Leia. But then when Lucas got his mitts on that prequel, you know, I mean, remember in Star Wars when you heard Ben Kenobi, you heard Alec Guinness talk about this great friendship he had with mm-hmm. Luke's father? Where was that friendship? Because I didn't see it anywhere in any of these films. I was like...
Exactly. It was when he dumped him in the lava.
That was, yeah. I'm doing this for you because you're my bro and I'm Ewan McGregor.
I can see that you're a dumb character. I really think you should just die.
Hey, pal, look, I'm Ewan McGregor. Not only am I playing Ben Kenobi, I've got a kilt under here, okay? So you're going in the lava, okay, pretty boy? Jump out of that.
That was one of my biggest problems with the early films is you had these amazing, like, the first films, most people were unknowns or, you know, somebody's daughter. And they became something, and it was like raw talent was found. And then in the prequels, we had amazing actors that you know they can perform better than this.
When
you know
mediocre,
that they are amazing.
When you get a performance out of the Neesons that isn't like Taken's.
Liam Neeson.
Yes.
Liam Neeson's.
The Neeson.
Battleship.
Liam Neeson.
Battleship.
I think he was asleep.
Yeah.
We had Sam Jackson in 3 Star Wars movies, and we didn't have a Use the Force mother.
Fuzzy Nerf herd.
I will go you one better. Are you going to tell me that a wrinkled old white man is going to beat up Samuel
Friendly
and Jackson? I don't think so. Not in this universe.
That's mother talking.
Well, additionally, he got sucker punched from behind by Whiny McWine a lot.
You know, this is the other thing too, is that you have these. You know, I will always argue the performance we wanted from Liam Neeson's in an episode one. We did get it.
Plural.
No, we did get it, but we didn't get it in episode one. We got it in Batman Begins. Because I was watching this movie going, oh, there's Qui-Gon. There's the performance we wanted.
You know, the later movies, there were no friendships.
None.
When he and Ewan McGregor on the screen, you were like, these people don't know each other. They don't give a rat's patootie about each other.
You've got Natalie Portman as a cardboard cutout. I mean,
watch
this
Garden
is a girl
State.
From The Professional.
She can act.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she can act. She can act.
Yeah.
No, there's no denying that. It
takes a special kind of director to suck all the life out of so many great actors.
It's just Lucas Poo-Poo, and before Lucas Poo-Poo derailed this podcast completely.
Let's think about this, guys. Family Guy and Robot Chicken show more love and respect for the franchise than Lucas Poo-Poo.
Yes. Drop your mic. Thank you. Good time.
Yes.
Okay, so before we break up...
Let's get back to the romances.
Before we break up the
Spielberg and Lucas.
The Spielberg and Lucas, the ultimate bromance.
No, I'm sorry. The ultimate bromance will always be Johnny Utah and Bodie.
What?
Why do I know those names? Johnny Utah and Bodie. What is that?
Wild man, Johnny Utah.
What is that?
Point Break, man. Best romance ever.
He had me.
Are they remaking that?
I think they are remaking that.
Please, no.
That's not so.
No, I heard they're remaking that.
Yeah.
And no, you want the ultimate. I'll tell you what an ultimate bromance is. And this, you know why? Because these guys are doing science. And they're doing science. They got a great bromance going on, and yet that's their job. They do science. I'm talking about the freaking Mythbusters, Jamie Hyneman and
Adam Savage.
I just feel like they hate each other, to be honest.
No. Honestly, we saw them live in Richmond for the Mythbusters tour. And if these guys hate each other, they are better actors than the entire cast of Star Trek, who all hated each other, with the exception of Nimoy Shatner and Kelly. Honestly, these two guys were inseparable through the entire evening, and they could not have been more affable.
When you're together like for 10 years like that,
yeah. You're not going to go on the road. You're not going to go on the road.
I was going to criticize you and say they're not fictional, but it's a reality show, so I guess they are.
Science. I'm just saying, science.
Science.
Right?
Yeah. I'm going to throw out one that maybe not a lot of people have heard about, and I'm actually going to have to look up the character names, because I remember one. I don't remember the other. It's a comic called Strangers in Paradise by Terry Moore. And it is Francine and...
I know, I can't remember her name.
Cachou. Francine and Cachou, who are two roommates, female roommates. And, you know, this is a comic that plays around with the idea of love in that, you know, it's about sexual love, but it's about a love that's so much more than sexual love. Just because, you know, both of them have had other boyfriends, other girlfriends, and Francine is one that's, you know, a little bit more straight-laced, but these two characters love each other in practically every way possible, and it just goes through and shows all of the wonderful and horrible and beautiful and awful stuff that happens because of that. And also it has, you know, a mob backstory and this incredibly awful 80s guy. But I also have to tout this comic because it's one of the few comics that writes and draws women as actual people. Like, you know, actual... Yes. In fact, you know, actual people with meat on their bones who and can hands. Still look... Yes. Still look gorgeous. But, yeah.
There is a common thread, you know, picking up on what you're saying about this comic and what we've been sort of saying in all these other ones is that the, you know, the characters, as Nutty was saying, you know, they are fully developed characters and they have interests and, you know, their own things. They all have flaws and
we're
all exposed to their flaws. And the arc is always, you know, they see something in each other or one sees something in the other that we don't. And it's the discovery of that inner treasure, that inner nugget that, you know, to bring it back to Max in 99, we see 99 as the competent one from the very beginning. Max is an idiot. And you know, over five seasons, you figure out why she likes Max and has always liked Max since episode one. And you learn to love Max just as much as 99 does, even though he's still a gargantuan buffoon. But oh, Max.
But charming. Oh, Max. Charming.
All right, so we got to wrap this up. So we're going to do a rapid fire round. Just throw out any random ones that you can think of very, very quickly. Jamie and Brienne.
Oh,
Batman
yes.
And Robin.
Ooh. Superman and Batman.
You're just throwing out random.
No, I love the bit where they're at the cafe together. Okay.
Oh, that's true. H.G. Wells and Jack the Ripper from Time After Time.
Tony Stark and Pepper Potts from the movies.
Oh, yeah.
And Tony Stark and Bruce Banner from the movies.
Yes!
How about
Science Bros.
Thor and Loki. I could if Thor the Dark World had been the Thor and Loki show, I would have been fine. Yes.
The Thor and Loki, road trip.
Yeah, the Thor and Loki on the road, you know?
Dean and Castiel. That's a supernatural.
Yeah.
That's supernatural. Mm.
Lois Lane and Clark Kent from the 90s show.
Lois and Clark.
Love it.
I'm blanking on the characters' names, but the time-traveling cop and the super hacker who actually sent her back in time from the beginning in Continuum. Have you seen the show Continuum? It's no. on Netflix. I highly recommend it.
Isn't it produced in Canada?
It is produced in Canada, yeah.
Commander Shepard my God. And Tally Zora.
Yes, Commander Shepard and Tally Zora.
Saul Tai and Bill Adama.
Oh,
that's a great bromance.
Did Sheridan and Delenn?
Oh yes.
And also Jakar and Londo. Got to throw that.
Yes.
While we're going there, Garrick and Bashir.
That's Slash, honey. Slash. bromance. Okay. We need to come up with a better word than bromance.
I think I'm learning that the way to work out if they're a good couple is if would you watch them if they were just in a car talking to each other?
Okay, then you know what? I'm not saying this because I sleep with a woman. Raid and Sorsha. And Sorsha and Merrick. Especially Sorsha and Merrick.
I'd like to see them on the
I would love to just go. I would just love to get Sorsha and Merrick. Well, first off, I'd like to have Sorsha there because if my cigar ever goes on lit, I can just reach over, she can light it, and I can start puffing again. Sorsha, particularly, I mean, Sorsha and Raid are a great couple. They're a great romantic couple. But Sorsha and Merrick, they have that
they have that Tenet, they have that Tenet kind of that Tenet Catherine T.
This is rapid fire T.
Oh yeah, he just loves me so much. He's gonna say. Plus, I paid him $20.
rapid fire. He's empty. Reload T. All right.
Heath, who do you ship Finchip with in Mass Effect? Heath, I don't.
While he's thinking,
in.
it's for me. It's Garrus.
Oh yeah, mine's always Liara.
There you go.
flaws with both, but Buffy and Angel and Buffy and Spike. Interesting relationships.
I disagree, but that's okay. All right,
I'm not saying good relationships, just interesting.
Interesting.
I'm going to drop the mic with the ultimate couple. I had planned to end with this one the entire time. This is the very last couple that I'm going to say. Gomez and Morticia.
Yes! Yes.
Both
talk about role models
both
for
TV
a marriage.
Series and film. Yeah.
Oh, Julia, you were taken too soon. Mm. Taken far too soon.
The first married couple on television that I actually believed had sex and enjoyed it.
And lots of it.
And it was all good. There was no, you know, there was no such thing as you knew that the Darren and Samantha had some off nights, and you knew that Lucy and Ricky, they might have had some really angry sex, but
even Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore,
But you know how every time when they would cut away to their bedrooms and it'd be two separate beds, you notice we never got a bedroom scene with Gomez and Morticia, because if someone showed two separate beds on the Addams Family, nobody would buy it.
No.
Are you kidding me?
I just think there's so much weird kinky stuff in there.
I bet if you went to their bedroom, there'd be like chains hanging off the ceilings and whips.
I bet they showed
not a bed, it's a pillow coffin.
They showed their bedroom. We just didn't know it was a bedroom. And no one says that sex in that household is limited to the bedroom.
Remember that great... The second TV couple that I believed had a sexual relationship would be Claire and Heathcliff. Huxtables.
There you go.
Yeah,
but they got a lot of kids. So.
Got a lot of kids.
Morticia and Gomez. Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
All right, so we could all stay married that long.
So we're going to
go around and we are going to pimp ourselves. We're going to start with Heath and Angela, if you could tell people where they can find you on the internet.
Yay. Well, actually, we're on the Red Dwarf intro cast, not Red Dwarf podcast, but that's okay. The email address is theredwarfpodcast@gmail.com. So there you go. but yeah, you can find us on Podbean. We're on the iTunes. We're on Facebook. Red Dwarf.
And we're about to watch the last episode.
After
when we get off.
Yes. Wow. Angela and I are about to do a commentary on the final Series X episode of Red Dwarf.
Yes.
So it will no longer be an intro cast very soon. It will just be a cast.
Graduating.
Yes.
And love.
But you can catch out our back library.
Yes, and love Sherlock. You need to talk about Sherlock.
Yes. My podcast, Through the Pages of Sherlock Holmes, which I record with some lovely people. It is an intro cast. We have one newbie, and we go through the original canon of Sherlock Holmes story by story. Ooh. We have just finished The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. We're moving on to the memoirs of Sherlock Holmes, and it's a lot of fun.
Now, you do that podcast. I'm just, this will probably get cut from the original cut, but you do that with Tabs. You do that with John Viscara and who's the other person?
Scott.
What's his last name?
That's awful.
Anyway, those are names that are probably familiar to T and Pip as well. So.
Yes. Right.
Then the Red Dwarf intro cast, we also need to shout out to Shane and Paul, our British buddies.
Shane is the super fan. He is awesome. All right, so T and Pip, where can people find you on the internet?
Let's start from the top. MinistryofPeculiarOccurrences.com. T Morris.com.
PJBallantine.com.
TheShareDesk.
.com.
Which is their podcast.
Which is our podcast. And you can also find you can also get autographed books. You can get a mug that says, "But I like black powder and dynamite." You can get all kinds of different.
You can get a teapot.
You can get a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences teapot.
all at our store, which can be reached through imaginethatstudios.com.
And it's also on Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences.
And it's on ministrypeculiararoccurrences.com as well.
Dawn's you can right. also get your anthology podcast.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Tales from the Tales Archives. Archives.
You can find all that there. And Dawn's Early Light, the book, is coming out in the end of March. And, of course, we also have the Ministry Initiative put out by Galileo Games. That should also be coming out in March as well.
Pre-order that. Okay. And, Tech, is there anything you want to say?
Hi, I'm Tech. when I find time, I write about math and physics and flying and guns and Mars and everything else in between. You can follow me right now on nimlas.org/blog or at xplane.org, where I am trying to recreate Cold War interceptors from the 1950s in a computer using nothing but books, math, and my imagination. And yes, it sounds as nerdy as it is. It is fun and awesome. And I don't know how to fly real airplanes, but gosh darn it, can I make them hit the ground in a simulator.
I was saying, Tech, I don't think they make 3D printers that big. I think you're out of luck, man.
You're gonna wait.
Tech, do you want to tell them about your pet project, or is that still secret?
Oh, the pet project, the Red War, which is halfway...
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
What other pet project?
The Arrow?
Huh?
The Arrow.
I just mentioned it.
No, you... Well, I guess
1950s interceptors that I'm building in a simulator.
Okay.
I didn't need to tell the listeners that it's a CF-105 Arrow Mark II that was canceled in 1959 and led to the death of the Canadian aerospace business, and every great American plane built ever since has been built by Canadian engineers who were working on this project in the past. It's a great piece of history. It's almost all gone. It was a four-part miniseries. Starred Dan Aykroyd, was quite good, if slightly politically skewed, but hey, whatever, we're Canadian, it rocked. Go Canada. And, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. I can go on forever. Red War, Real Soldiers on Mars, written as a nonfiction book. I'll let that sink in. It's coming.
Yes, editing.
Editing, yes, and then realizing editing. That I went 38,000 words and never mentioned drones, so now I have to rewrite half my book.
Oh, lovely. Okay, so there we go. Lots of wrap-up. All right, thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you, Mixed Nutcases, for listening. And you can send feedback to 347-NUTTY-42. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/NuttyBytes. You can find me on nimlas.org and leave things in the comments, or you can try and figure out how to spell Nuchas and tweet me there. All right. Have a good one. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Bye.
You're a wild man, Johnny Utah.
Shane, I've done it.
Again, Paul, then open the window. There's no need to announce it.
No, not that. I've invented a machine that can erase our memory of Red Dwarf so you can watch it for the first time. Again.
Really? Is it safe?
Completely. Although you might also forget how to read, write, and do math.
I'm a politician. I don't need any of that.
Also, it would probably make your head explode.
And ruin my hair? No. Let's just find a lovely American couple who have barely even heard of Red Dwarf to watch the show with us. That would be the next best thing to seeing it for the first time.
Hi, I'm Angela. This is my husband, Heath.
What are you doing in my house?
Well, we're just your everyday American couple wandering about looking for someone who feels like watching a show we've barely even heard of with us.
Maybe we're recording a podcast about it.
That's really convenient.
And you can listen in on the fun with the Red Dwarf Intro Cast.
Check us out on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact, feedback, at nuttybytes@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.
Unnecessary censorship.
Alrighty then. Is everybody ready? Wiggles, red leather, yellow leather.
The human torch robbed a bank.
We didn't get to that part yet.
All right.
You'll notice I don't get a level check because my levels are always perfect.
Because you don't care.
You're sitting in the background a bit like a supervillain. Yeah. It's a little disturbing.
You should have a white cat.
You should have a white cat or something and just be stroking it through every episode.
We got something. We got something. We got a new
Christmas
present.
Just keep talking.
We got a new Christmas present this year that actually works perfectly.
Oh, dear Lord.
I need to, like, here, let me turn on the
light. Soon, dragon. Soon.
So it's Nutty and it's Fred, right?
Yes.
Fred.
Or his cat, apparently.
He does both.
Ah!
Hello, Mr. Tiddles.
His name is Mr. Hoppity. Yes.
Hello, Mr. Hoppity.
I think it's even actually more scary that it's a rabbit.
And he broke. Look at that. They brought in the rabbit and they broke it. They broke Google Hangouts.
And I will love him and hug him and squeeze him and call him George.
And we're live.
Boom, boom, boom.
Tune in next week when you'll hear Dr. Bob say.
Okay.
So it covers my territory.
Giant cat. Oh, hi, cat. Don't mind giant cat.
Halo. You. Don't mind me.
That's Sebastian's tail.
Yes. That was Sebastian's tail.
He wanted Thanks to be Sebastian. Involved.
Yeah. Well, now hang on. I will say, this is what you need, Tech. This is what you need on your lap. You need this. This is a secret agent. Yeah. Makes your bunny look like a pussy, don't it? But anyway,
not nearly as pussy-like as your pussy, but
I was actually gonna...
This is the Rosen from the Books of the Order.
Rosen.
He will mess you up.
I was actually going to tell a quick story before I got upstage by the
Hey, let's see who can get rid of theirs faster. I dare you.
Mine will come back.
Yeah. But there was.
I think. Few. That...
Maybe.
It's hard to remember, right?
It's all.
Called rye happened, and
And then the next morning I woke up.
Bucko.
Just bleeding. I don't know what was going on.
You promised you'd never tell.
I will say, by the way, they did disappear from the barbecue for a good hour, so I have no idea what happened.
Oh, on another note, get tested. Just saying.
Okay. Oh, Thanks, bro.
See, that's you know what I'm talking about. You just like you squeeze them. Just lean back suddenly.
This is all getting cut out.
I have this thing when T's on a panel and he's saying something, I just jab him in the between the two muscles in the leg. I'm like, nyeh! It's the subtle signal.
And if that doesn't work, mentor shrimp punch.
And T slides under the table. It's all right. He needed a nap.
At the okay. Text out.
I'll be right back. Don't worry.
Yeah. You got.
Oh, man. So we're just going to vamp until Tech gets back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did want...
I can just see the... who puts it out?
What? Crown?
Crown. I can just see Crown like... Ah!
What are you
Go to Venice. I don't really know. I just feel like Venice might be too fragile for Eliza and Wellington to visit.
Although
we could sink that puppy.
I was going to say, I'm telling you right now, if Eliza sets foot in Italy, that tower's coming down. That tower is coming down.
And that's Pisa, not Venice.
Either way, it's coming down.
Which tower? It could
happen. Oh, I was just thinking about Venice just sinking under the waves, and Eliza's like, what?
It was just a few explosives.
Who would have thought it was so fragile?
I know. Oh, dear.
Tech, I know that's a plague, Dr. Mask, but all I can think is Spy versus Spy.
I think the same thing, so I mean, I get the same thing.
You know, you should have brought Mini Doc up for this.
I should have.
Yes. By the way,
on the next commercial break.
Next commercial break. Yes. Helen Mannin, Cynical Woman, did a commission for me. Tech now has an 18-inch
crocheted fabric sculpture of the Clockwork Doctor.
Of course.
There's
goggles, canister, hoses.
We got one of her ninjas.
We have her ninjas. We have one of her ninjas.
We got one of her little ninjas. Yeah. And some of her cards. She also had cards as well.
Yep.
Yes, it will be very exciting to get back to BuildCon and see everyone. And Detroit was nice enough to move their convention to a different weekend, so we don't have any conflict.
That. Awesome. Yeah. To make sure things happen. And in the end...
Is that Elphaba or Sebastian?
It's Elfie. I'm sorry. It's Elfie.
I was like, that can't be Sebastian.
No.
I know her so too well.
It's this thing.
Oh, hi.
It's nice. They've got to have
nutty.
Hang on 1 second. I'm about to die.
Oh, okay. Take it up.
Can I get your stuff?
Ouch. You already have my stuff.
Woohoo!
That's what marriage is. Oh, ooh.
Oops.
Excuse me. Oh, that was a bad tickle. Yes, no.
Another cat. Yes,
another cat.
They're the whole reason I watched the show. Whoa.
I'm sorry.
Someone's not a Peter and Walter fan.
No, she's not.
I watched that show Dark Matters when you're not home, Mutter. John Noble freaks me out.
When that happened, what was on my screen was Tex stroking the bunny.
Love it.
Stroking the bunny.
Oh, dear.
Well,
no, they don't.
Actually, I do have to wait.
What was that?
Uh-oh.
Cats.
So,